Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and our topic today on Route 51 is the issue of the day, gun control, in the wake of a series of mass shootings in America, culminating in the elementary school massacre in Newtown, Connecticut. President Obama yesterday formally proposed the most expansive gun control policies in generations, with proposals for restrictions on assault weapons and high-capacity clips, universal background checks, and 23 separate executive actions that he is taking without going through Congress. Reaction has been swift from both sides on this emotional issue, and we have them represented on our program today. Joining me in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios is F.E. Buster Bachhuber of Wausau, a member of the National Rifle Association Board of Directors. And joining us by phone from Madison, Tony Gibbart, the policy coordinator for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Today we'll be looking at the proposals put forth by the White House, also the tough new gun laws passed by the legislature in New York and signed by Governor Cuomo, and the reaction from both sides in speeches, debates, quotes, and television ads. We want to hear from you. What do you think about limits on high-capacity clips and assault weapons and universal background checks, even in person-to-person private transactions? Are they overdue or are they overdone? Will they take away our freedoms under the Constitution, or will they give us the freedom to live our lives more safely? We want to hear from you. I know you've got an opinion, and our lines are wide open right now. You can call in at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Buster and Tony, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good to be here, Glenn.
Yes, thank you, Glenn.
Buster, let's start with you. To introduce you to our audience, tell us about your membership in the National Rifle Association and why you've devoted so much of your life and your time and energy to that organization. And give us an idea of how long you've been on the board of directors.
I first joined the National Rifle Association back in 1956, and I've been a continuous member ever since. I'm finishing my third 3-year term on the board of directors this spring, and hoping to be reelected for another 3-year term. Since I retired, it's been my life, my hobby, my avocation, the whole thing wrapped up in one.
Why is it so important to you?
Well, growing up, and I know us old guys always look back at the good old days, but freedom to me is a very important thing. I enlisted in the Army and served as an infantryman overseas, and for a reason, and love the country, love our freedom, and I just would like to keep it that way.
We understand the NRA is having its statewide convention in Wausau the weekend of February 10th.
Yes, we are. Looking for a great time. A lot of very important people politically and administratively, both from the state government and a lot of our leadership from headquarters is going to join us that weekend.
Tony Gibbart, tell us about the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
Thanks, Glenn. Yes, the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence, or WCADV as we call it for short, is the statewide voice for victims of domestic violence in Wisconsin. And we work with the shelters and domestic violence programs around the state, with advocates and volunteers, with law enforcement officers, prosecutors, lawmakers, to help make Wisconsin a safer place for everyone, and in particular victims of domestic violence. And so because of the risk that guns in the hands of domestic abusers pose to victims of domestic violence, we are a voice on the issue for sensible gun safety regulations. And so I'm glad that I could be on the program to talk about that.
Okay. Tony, we do have a telephone connection with you, and we need you to speak up if you can.
Every once
in a while your voice trails off.
Okay.
But isn't it true that your organization is involved in much more than the issue of gun control?
Oh, absolutely. It's one small piece of what we work on. We work on criminal laws related to domestic violence, laws related to restraining orders, family law, housing laws, in addition to, as I said, training law enforcement and shelter staff to respond to this issue.
If people want to find out more about the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence, where should they look?
They should check out our website at wcadv.org.
Well, those are our guests, Tony Gibbart of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Buster Bachhuber of the National Rifle Association. Let's get into it and listen to President Obama speaking at his news conference in the White House yesterday.
Like most Americans, I believe the Second Amendment guarantees an individual right to bear arms. I respect our strong tradition of gun ownership. I also believe most gun owners agree that we can respect the Second Amendment while keeping an irresponsible, law-breaking few from inflicting harm on a massive scale. I believe most of them agree that if America worked harder to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people, there would be fewer atrocities like the one that occurred in Newtown. That's what these reforms are designed to do. They're common sense measures. They have the support of the majority of the American people. And yet, that doesn't mean any of this is going to be easy to enact or implement. If it were, we'd already have universal background checks. The ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines never would have been allowed to expire. More of our fellow Americans might still be alive, celebrating birthdays and anniversaries and graduations. This will be difficult. There will be pundits and politicians and special interest lobbyists publicly warning of a tyrannical, all-out assault on liberty. Not because that's true, but because they want to gin up fear or higher ratings or revenue for themselves. And behind the scenes, they'll do everything they can to block any common sense reform and make sure nothing changes whatsoever. The only way we will be able to change is if their audience, their constituents, their membership says this time must be different, that this time we must do something to protect our communities and our kids.
That was President Obama speaking at the White House yesterday, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the discussion on gun control proposals, it's 1-800-780-9742. Buster Bockhuber, the president, describing himself as a strong advocate for the Second Amendment, saying that most Americans agree with his common sense proposals, saying that that includes most gun owners, and those who don't agree with him are trying to gin up fear. Your reaction to that?
Sorry, Mr. President, but all of what you said is a bold-faced lie. Your record has been anti-Second Amendment from the beginning, and you are the only one in your mind that can divine common sense. I don't think you got some. I think the rest of the country does when it comes to this issue.
Tony, your reaction to the president's speech and more important, your reaction to his proposals?
Well, I think the president is right that these are common sense proposals, and they are supported by the vast majority of Americans, the vast majority of gun owners, and in a number of cases, the vast majority of NRA members, and in particular, the issue of criminal background checks. There's polling from GOP pollsters that shows that most NRA members support background checks on all gun sales because
not true.
Most gun owners are not in line with the NRA view.
And not true.
Well, let's let Buster make his objections, and then Tony will let you answer his comments.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you're putting numbers out there, Tony, that I challenge you to back up. I happen to know a lot more about what our NRA membership feels, I'm afraid, than you do. And, of course, you can go to a poll. I was just looking at this morning's Gallup polls or polling they did yesterday. The swing since the Connecticut massacre has strongly come back against the proposals of banning semi-automatic weapons.
So I'm referring to a poll that was done by Frank Luntz, who is a GOP pollster. And this is from the December 10th, 2009 edition of the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
In his survey of 832 gun owners, including 400 NRA members, Luntz found that 82% of NRA members supported prohibiting people on the terrorist watch list from possessing guns, and 69% favored requiring all gun sellers at gun shows to conduct criminal background checks on people buying guns.
Sure. And you look at Frank Luntz's background, I could pay him tomorrow and I could flip those numbers very handily. Frank's a hired gun, unfortunately.
Well, Mr. Luntz is a Republican, a conservative Republican, isn't he, Buster? So he should be on your side of the issue.
He's a hired gun, Glenn. He can pose any question that you ask him to, and he can flip those results tomorrow if he wanted to.
All right. Well, let's look at some of the specific proposals in the president's plan. And, Tony, we'll start with something that I know is of particular interest to you, the background checks. Mr. Obama's plan requires background checks for all gun sales, checks for even private person-to-person sales, checks at gun shows. strengthening the system by sharing information gathered by states and federal agencies, and another provision which would keep what is described as dangerous, untrustworthy people from owning guns.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, your reaction to the call for greater background checks, and tell us why that's important to you as someone who is working against the problem of domestic violence.
Well, the issue of background checks and the need for background checks on all gun sales is something that we care about, and it comes to us through working with victims of domestic violence across Wisconsin and researching and analyzing domestic violence homicides in Wisconsin. More domestic violence homicides are committed with a gun than any other weapon, and there are a significant portion of those where the weapon was illegally purchased or possessed by the domestic abuser. If someone is a felon, if someone is a violent domestic abuser, if someone has a restraining order against them, our laws say that they're not supposed to possess a gun. And that's because we owe it to victims who come forward and get those restraining orders and seek justice and help the state identify and prosecute violent criminals to protect them. And we know that there is an extreme risk to their lives and the lives of their children if those abusers are allowed to continue to possess those weapons.
Well, Tony, a news release from your organization supporting background checks, in fact, we received it just yesterday, it says that the current loopholes have resulted in numerous deaths in Wisconsin. What's your evidence for that?
Well, the most recent domestic violence homicide that gained a lot of attention in Wisconsin is a perfect example of this. There was a shooting that took place at a Brookfield salon right outside of Milwaukee back mm-hmm. in October. Mm-hmm. And that shooting occurred immediately after the perpetrator was ordered to not possess weapons. Mm-hmm. And what did that perpetrator do? He knew he couldn't pass a background check, so he sought a weapon on the Internet, posted a wanted-to-buy ad where he said that he needed a gun ASAP, was willing to pay cash, wanted a high magazine clip, and got a gun within a matter of hours, and then within a matter of hours turned around and killed three women.
Well, Buster, what problem would you have with that? I mean, we've already got background checks from dealers. Why not extend them to gun shows and person-to-person transactions and the Internet?
Sure, because it's only going to work for the honest people in society, the nonviolent people. And Tony, I can sympathize with your efforts. I love your efforts. I wish you all the best. About 8.5 years ago, one of my very best friends was murdered by his wife in a domestic abuse situation, and yes, she was shot. Following that, I started to learn as much as I could about the situation because being friends for many, many, many years and going out with this couple and things, I didn't have the slightest inkling of what was going on. There were no restraining orders or anything of that nature. But the problem, you see, that I have with requiring a background check, now you said that this individual couldn't pass a background check because of the restraining order. I don't know if it was in the system or not. It was fairly new, but let's just say it was in the system and that would have blocked him. Okay, so he found a private transaction. Now, is the situation going to be such that he is going to agree to a background check, or is he going to find the black market seller that is going to sell to him in any case? And I submit, let's shift to the south side of Chicago, and I'm sure there's hundreds of guns changing hands every day with the murder rate that they have in a city that doesn't allow any handguns.
The issue, though, is that we're making it convenient for people like Radcliffe Houghton, the shooter.
Well, inconvenient. In your work, have you found that inconvenience is going to change people's behavior? I haven't seen that, and I say it got
very close.
Let's
give Tony a chance to answer, Buster.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Tony. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. There have been numerous studies that show that background checks do reduce the ability of domestic abusers and other individuals to get guns. And, you know, as I said before, we have made a deal with victims when they come forward, when they have the courage to come forward and hold perpetrators accountable, that we're going to do what we can to protect them. And to simply say, well, it might not solve all cases, or your perpetrator might be able to drive down to Chicago and get a gun, so we're not going to take the simple step of requiring a background check, That's just unacceptable, and the most reasonable people find that unacceptable.
Well, both of you, if in fact it would work.
Hang on just a second, Buster. Sure. Both of you have mentioned Chicago. We have a phone call from Charlie in Chicago right now, and let's take it. 1-800-780-9742. Charlie, you are on Route 51 with Buster Bachhuber and Tony Gibbert.
Len, Buster, Tony, gentlemen, thanks for the call. I just caught a portion of the program because I can't get you streaming, but I know what the program's about. And one of the items mentioned was inconvenience. And I think a good example of inconvenience reducing fatalities is the interlock device for DUI convictions. It's pretty much clear data that says those devices that make it inconvenient for people convicted of drunk driving to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can inconvenience somebody from buying a gun, I think the legitimate citizen, the responsible citizen, isn't going to find it offensive, and it shouldn't be an inconvenience unless, you know, I'm going to go hunting tomorrow and I need the gun tomorrow. Well, they should have thought about that a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And originally I called because everybody's talking about the NRA and the Second Amendment. I've been asking people why the concept of a militia is thrown out, a well-armed militia. What's that going to do today against the U.S. military complex, if that's the argument, the Second Amendment, we have the right to a well-armed militia?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that fall into the argument of today's military complex?
All right. Charlie, thanks so much for the phone calls. Let's let Buster take a whack at this one.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Thanks. Bye.
A couple of problems with inconvenience. Now, with your drunk driver, driving is been defined by the courts many times as being a privilege. Gun ownership in this country is a constitutional right. And individual ownership of firearms has been upheld by the Supreme Court. So I don't think that the analogy is right on point. I think what is on point right now, you're talking, Antony, that the domestic abuser is committing a felony when he obtains a firearm. The convicted felon is committing a felony when he obtains a firearm. The mentally deficient adjudicated to be such is committing a felony when he obtains a firearm. So let's throw one more law on top of it. Let's hand the victim one more piece of paper to hold up in front of her face, and everything is going to be cool. I'm looking at human nature. I'm looking at modifying human nature, and this is where I think your most important work comes in, Tony, is working with the abuser and the victim and modifying their behavior before we get to the point of a murder.
Tony?
Well, that's certainly correct, and that is the vast majority of what we do. But, you know, I'll say it again, that this is a very simple common step that we can take to prevent gun violence. And there, as I said, there have been studies done that show that it's effective, and it's something that the vast majority of Americans agree with. Buster is wrong in his profile of a domestic abuser. These aren't people who are gangsters who know necessarily how to easily buy a gun on the black market. They are people who are generally law-abiding, who are violent within their own homes. And so they don't have connections to drug cartels to be able to go and get a gun on the black market. And it sounds like and I'm sorry that Buster, that you experienced that death of your friend some time ago. But I mean, I guess I would ask you to think about that situation. If you didn't know that there was violence going on in that relationship,
I sure didn't.
Yeah, that person probably wasn't a hardened criminal in terms of knowing where to buy a gun on the black market. So.
No, but he was a gunny like me, and we bought and sold and traded guns among the two of us and among a number of our friends because we were both very active in competitive shooting. But I agree, that's a little unusual situation.
Gentlemen, we got to take a quick break. Charlie, thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate you joining the discussion. 1-800-780-9742. If you would like to join the discussion, 1-800-780-9742. on the issue and the politics of gun control with Buster Bachhuber of the National Rifle Association and Tony Gibbart of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. And, boy, the lines are filling up. We're going to be getting to your phone calls on the issue of gun control with Buster Bachhuber of the National Rifle Association and Tony Gibbart of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence. But we did hear from President Obama, so let's hear right now, and I've got to make sure that I've got the right tape queued up, from Wayne LaPierre of the National Rifle Association.
The only way to stop a monster from killing our kids is to be personally involved and invested in a plan of absolute protection. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Would you rather have your 911 call bring a good guy with a gun from a mile away or from a minute away? I can imagine the headlines, the shocking headlines you'll print tomorrow. More guns, you'll claim, are the NRA's answer to everything. Your implication will be that guns are evil and have no place in society, much less in our schools. But since when did the gun automatically become a bad word? A gun in the hands of a Secret Service agent protecting our president isn't a bad word. A gun in the hands of a soldier protecting the United States of America isn't a bad word. And when you hear your glass breaking at 3 a.m. and you call 911, you won't be able to pray hard enough for a gun in the hands of a good guy to get there fast enough to protect you.
Tony Gibbart, the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Comment on that.
Well, I think the statement from the NRA is really just meant to confuse the issue, because the positions that they're taking on the president's proposals and sensible gun regulation are widely popular. And so what they have to do is confuse the issue and distract. And so the proposal about, you know, putting armed guards in schools, I think is just not sensible. Mr. LaPierre called it a plan of absolute protection, but we know from Columbine that it's not a plan of absolute protection. There were two armed police officers in that school. And that did not stop that tragedy from happening. Certainly there were armed police officers on the Virginia Tech campus, and that's one of the worst shootings in our nation's history.
Buster,
so no one is suggesting that it wouldn't be a good idea to look at being able to invest in law enforcement officers or schools, that is perhaps part of a solution, but it's not the absolute solution. And most people know that and realize that because, you know, they live in the real world, and they know that even when there are police officers nearby or in the school, that doesn't prevent tragedy, especially when someone is armed with an assault rifle or a high-capacity magazine or armor-piercing ammunition.
Now, all three of those items are going to be restricted if the president has his way. There is a reinstitution of the ban on assault rifles, the one that was in effect from, 94 to 04, mm-hmm. And then making armor-piercing bullets harder to get and limiting high-capacity clips to 10 shots, Buster Bachhuber.
Okay. The assault weapons ban, the so-called ban on military-looking, painted black and it's a bad gun, put a walnut stock on it and it's a good gun. They all function the same. They're semi-automatics. That ban did absolutely nothing to the crime rate. It was continuing down prior to the ban. It continued sliding on down, and the 10 years since the ban has gone, the crime rate, violent crime rate, has continued to slide on down. The Justice Department's study towards the end of the ban was to just let it sunset. It was a useless piece of legislation. Then this armor-piercing stuff, every piece of ammunition that's used for hunting will shoot through a level 3A, the heavy bullet-resistant vest used by law enforcement. And that's just a fact of the ballistics, the energies, and things that are involved. Yes, they will stop most pistol bullets, but armor-piercing is a very misnomer. Yes, the military uses it. I don't know of anybody that does because of its lack of purpose. However, what I use for deer hunting will go through that vest.
Let's go to the phones. Let's pick up Jim in Rothschild. Jim, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Jim, is this Jim Moss of the Libertarian Party?
Yeah, you got a Libertarian on again.
Hey, good afternoon, Jim.
Hey.
Your question, Jim.
Oh, well, I just wanted to comment about the Second Amendment thing, because everybody's talking about the Second Amendment, and then they bring up the well-organized militia and it gets confused. And I'm proud that we in Wisconsin in the 1990s passed an amendment, which is now Article 1, Section 25 of the Wisconsin Constitution, which says the people, that's us, have the right to keep and bear arms for any lawful purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're going to make any laws restricting guns, it has to comply with our state constitution. And I think even if the feds pass some kind of repressive thing on gun ownership, hopefully our state will protect our people from the feds, because this is how we protect ourselves.
Jim,
many states are doing exactly that, Jim.
Now, my understanding of contemporary constitutional law is that what the federal government does trumps the states. That was the result of the Civil War and the 14th Amendment. Federal law is supreme. So the Wisconsin Constitution can say whatever you want it to say, but if the federal government passes a law, the Wisconsin Constitution doesn't matter.
Well, yes and no. We've thrown away Article 10, and which does reserve to the states. And, of course, that's just been totally butchered and thrown away. But it belongs, I think Jim would agree with me, that the feds don't have a constitutional right to mess in the states.
Tony, I'd like to get your reaction to Jim Moss's comments.
Well, federal gun prohibitions, like those that apply to felons or domestic abusers or people with restraining orders or people who have been involuntarily committed, have been upheld as constitutional, even by this most recent Supreme Court in the Heller decision. So I don't think this is really part of the mainstream constitutional thinking on federal gun prohibitions.
No, subject to reasonable regulation, certainly.
Buster, let me ask you a question. If you're an originalist and a strict constructionist with a conservative view of the Constitution, Justice Scalia, he says the Constitution means exactly what it meant to the founding fathers when they wrote it in the late 1700s.
Yep.
Doesn't it follow, then, that the Second Amendment only applies to the kinds of arms the founding fathers knew when they wrote that language? It covers single-shot rifles and pistols and nothing more.
Well, and then I guess we have to say that the First Amendment only applies to newspapers.
It does. It does. It does.
and stop right there. No radio, no television, internet.
But Buster, it does not apply to the public airwaves.
But the founding fathers never could have envisioned television or the internet or anything of that nature.
Right. Tell you that the First Amendment does not apply to radio or television the way it applies to the press, because it was a new media. I think we just lost Jim Moss. Let's go back to the telephones, and let's go to Matt now in Wausau. Matt, you're on Route 51 with Tony Gibbert and Buster Bachhoover.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. This is the one thing I want to point out here is, Buster, you're talking about the protection and the safety of the guns.
Mm-hmm.
If guns really make us safer, why aren't we the safest nation in the developed world? We're obviously the most armed nation in the developed world, but we're not the safest one in terms of gun violence. And how do you explain that? We've got huge amounts of people. I mean, thousands of people getting killed with guns.
Yes,
and
we're
not safer.
No, and at the same time, the numbers will swing 10 times that amount of those killed, of those that have saved their lives with guns. Gary Kleck, a criminologist with the University of Florida at Tallahassee, and John Lott have both done extensive studies on how guns can save lives. Why do we have shootings in this country? I think it's a cultural thing.
Well,
it probably goes back right to the roots of this country, our fierce independence, our Wild West thinking.
Buster, can you cite some of those instances where having a gun was a good thing to have? Because I would say most of the time the guns are hurting the people that have them.
Oh no.
Statistics prove that. Buster.
No, they do
prove that.
Well, then the 100 million guns
be killed with your own weapon in your own house.
Matt, let's Buster Buckover respond.
Most. I know, but we got 80 million gun owners, or closer to 100 million gun owners, owning well over a million guns. So any crime, any suicide, any accidents are really very, very small statistics. So when you throw in that most gun owners get hurt by their own guns, I don't buy into that.
Well, let me get back to my first point,
and
maybe you can address that. If guns make us safer, and we are more armed than any other industrialized nation, why are we experiencing more gun fatalities in this country than anywhere else?
All right, Matt, thanks so much for the phone call. We've got to let Buster answer, get reaction from Tony, and then move on. Buster?
Great,
sure.
Thanks.
I think it's a cultural thing. I think, and maybe Tony knows something in the area of domestic abuse, how we compare to other societies. As I say, this country was founded by some pretty fiercely independent people that moved west, and call it the Wild West mentality, call it independence, whatever you will. We're not up to this point a country where the individual knuckles under to the state like in many, many other parts. Tony, is there a comparison of our domestic abuse problem with other countries that you're aware of?
Well, I don't want to get too far afield into that.
No.
I guess I'll just say that, I think the caller raises some good questions that the NRA and the gun lobby don't have very good answers for. We have by far more guns than any other developed nation in the world, and our violent crime rate and gun violence rate is higher than practically any developed nation, and in some cases, third world nations.
Sure. How's the domestic abuse rate in Japan?
Do you know?
I mean, really, if we're going to make these comparisons with other countries, your field, I'm sure you've looked at it. How's domestic abuse in Japan?
Well, because, it's just not helpful to get into that.
Well, we're making comparisons, so let's drop off the rest of the world then. You want to bring in the rest of the world, so do I. So let's bring them in or leave them out.
Gentlemen, I'm going
to
take...
We started to talk about how domestic abuse is defined in, the United States versus how it's defined in Pakistan or Japan. We'd have a whole hour-long program.
Right. I'm going to take a quick break, gentlemen. The subject is gun control. The show is Route 51. The phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
We've also got Buster Bachhuber of the National Rifle Association and Tony Gibbard of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence to talk about gun control. We were just talking about the comparison between gun ownership in this country and gun ownership overseas, and that was the subject of a rather heated exchange not too long ago. Let me get my notes here. It was between Piers Morgan of CNN and Larry Pratt, the executive director of Gun Owners of America. Let's listen to that and come back on the other side.
The gun murder rate in countries like Britain or Germany or Australia, who've all suffered massacres many years ago of similar nature, they are 35 people killed a year.
Your murder rate is lower than ours. That is true.
Lower?
Your
it's violent 35 crime, against 12,000.
Your violent
in
crime
Australia,
rate,
they had a
your
massacre,
violent crime rate is higher than
weapons.
Ours, as is the violent crime rate in Australia. America is not the Wild West that you are depicting. We only have the problem in our cities and unhappily in our schools, where people like you have been able to get laws put on the books that keep people from being able to defend themselves. I honestly don't understand why you would rather have people be victims of a crime than be able to defend themselves. It's incomprehensible.
You're an unbelievably stupid man, aren't you?
It seems to me that you're morally obtuse. You seem to prefer being a victim to being able to prevail over the criminal element. And I don't know why you want to be the criminal's friend.
That's Piers Morgan of CNN and Larry Pratt of the Gun Owners of America. And Buster and Tony, I want to thank you for having a more civil discussion than that.
Now I want to bring Tony right out of his chair. Are you ready, Tony?
Go for it.
If one of the people you're working with is being stalked, I would recommend some training, purchase of a gun, and getting a concealed carry permit. I think you probably disagree. Let me have it.
Well, you know, Buster, you're right that I probably am a little bit more skeptical about that as a solution. You know, the data shows that a woman is something like 80 times more likely to be killed with a gun than to use it in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
That the presence of a gun in an abused woman's home is increases her chance of death by 6 to 8 times, regardless of whether it's her weapon or not. But, you know, that's really not the issue here. That has nothing to do with the proposal that the president put forward and the kinds of objections that the NRA is making to common sense gun reform. So, again, you know, we talked about how there's this attempt to confuse the issue and distract, and that's a strategy from the NRA. I guess I'd focus, you know, again, back on why we can't have criminal background checks on gun sales, why we need assault weapons on the street, why we need high-capacity magazines for hunting. That's where this debate is.
Let's go to Dale in Milwaukee, who's been waiting patiently. Dale, you're on Route 51 with Tony Gibbart and Buster Bachhuber.
Hi, Dale.
Hi, my question is for Tony. He mentioned the Ozana Safa shootings in Brookfield, and living in the Milwaukee area, we got inundated with coverage of those shootings. My understanding was that Radcliffe, the shooter, did possess firearms before the shooting happened, that he was under a restraining order, but it was the Brown Deer Police Department that failed to confiscate those firearms per the restraining order. Tony, can you comment on that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And you're right, there was a lot of media coverage, and some of it was confusing, so I can understand why the caller doesn't necessarily know exactly what happened. To the best of my knowledge, and I believe to the best of the knowledge, or best of the authorities' knowledge in this case, Radcliffe Houghton did not possess a gun prior to purchasing one through the Internet. He did, at one point, a year or so before the shooting, appear to point a gun at the victim during a standoff situation. It was later believed that that was not a gun, and I've heard from the victim's family that they don't think that he possessed a gun until that day before the shooting where he purchased the gun online.
But the Brown Deer Police Department never did go and search his home to make sure he did not possess a firearm.
Right, and when they thought they saw a gun, they thought they saw a long-barreled gun, they thought they saw a rifle. We know that he used a handgun, and we know that it was purchased through armslist.com. I have you know, the actual ad that he posted to get that gun, mm-hmm. again, within a matter
okay.
of hours.
And if there was mandatory background checks on online sales, is there any guarantee that the restraining order would have hit the database in time to stop that purchase?
You know, my understanding is that it was in the database. You know, we know in Wisconsin we have CCAP, and things get updated, at least in the Milwaukee County court system where this took place, fairly instantaneously. So I think there is a very, very good chance that it would have been in the database.
Oh, Dale, thanks so much for the phone call. Got to move on. We've got a lot of people waiting. In fact, we've got one caller who didn't want to be on the air. He says the only way to protect our children is to arm someone on the inside. He says signs outside the school should read, any attempt to harm children will be met with bodily force. Staff is armed. And he claims that the police in the school is comforting to children. Now, that brings me to a quote from Vladimir Lenin, who says, one man with a gun can control 100 without one. Buster, why don't we have you take that one first, and then we'll go to Tony.
Only if you let me have my high-capacity magazines. Otherwise, 100 to 1 gets a little tough with a 10-shooter. Presence in schools, I think, is a good idea. I don't know that it has to be police. But what I think we need to be very careful of is our children have to have a good learning environment. We can't march them over to a vacated penitentiary, lock them up and teach them. So there has to be an element of serenity, well, I don't know if I want to say serenity, but a learning environment that the kids can work in. But on the other hand, armed police can be plainclothes. Armed teachers that want to go, just like pilots, undergo additional training, have a locked firearm in their classroom readily accessible to them, biometrics, whatever. There's a lot we can do with these schools. But let's not, schools are still very, very, very safe. There's more drunk drivers hitting school buses than we have shootings as far as that goes. And assault rifle, we always want to go and get that semi-automatic rifle, which the last FBI reports is used in less than 1% of crimes. So why are we zeroing in on a semi-automatic rifle when, in fact, handguns are used in most crimes? And I think you pointed that out, Tony.
Tony,
so why are we going after rifles when handguns are doing the shooting?
Tony, I'd like you to react to the concept of armed guards in schools, which was the centerpiece of what Wayne LaPierre was talking about in his press conference after the shooting in Connecticut.
Right. As I said, I think that the vast majority of folks feel like if there's something that we can do to increase the police presence in schools, that that's a good thing, that it's part of the solution. I think what most people found so bizarre about the NRA press conference was it was presented as if that was the only solution, as we heard, the absolute solution. And again, it's just a distraction. It's not a response to the question of why can't we have universal criminal background checks in Wisconsin and throughout the country.
Because
why do we need
work.
High-capacity magazines? Why do we need assault weapons?
Well, constitutional rights aren't based on need, Tony, and what you're asking for, human behavior, the private sale, compliance is going to be voluntary. It's not going to affect the bad guys who already, your felons, your domestic restraint people, all of those are committing a felony when they obtain a gun. So committing two felonies versus committing one, I really don't think they care all that much, or they wouldn't.
No, it's about the seller, Buster. It's about the responsible gun owner who is selling their guns, that they go to a firearms dealer and have a background check done on the person who is posting on the Internet that they need a gun ASAP, just to make sure that that is not a domestic abuser or a felon or someone who's violent. So it's not. I agree with you that someone who's about to commit a murder is probably not going to care about another felony. What I disagree with you on is the fact that we can regulate the private market so that there are background checks done, so that responsible gun owners, when they sell a firearm, can be assured that they're not setting in motion the next Brookfield shooting.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. My guests today are Buster Bachhuber, member of the National Rifle Association Board of Directors. Buster lives in Wausau. And joining us by telephone from Madison, Tony Gibbart of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence. I'm going to play a couple of television ads now that are making the rounds, one from the National Rifle Association and another featuring a group of celebrities talking about the issue of gun control, and let's take a listen and we'll come back on the other end.
Are the president's kids more important than yours? Then why is he skeptical about putting armed security in our schools when his kids are protected by armed guards at their school? Mr. Obama demands the wealthy pay their fair share of taxes, but he's just another elitist hypocrite when it comes to a fair share of security. Protection for their kids and gun-free zones for ours.
Columbine. Virginia Tech.
Tucson.
Aurora.
Fort Hood.
Oak Creek.
Newtown.
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 How many more?
How many more?
How many more colleges?
How many more classrooms?
How many more movie theaters?
How many more houses of faith?
How many more shopping malls?
How many more street corners?
How many more?
How many more?
Enough.
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 Demand a plan.
Right now. As a mom.
As a dad. As a friend. As a husband.
As a wife.
As an American.
As an American.
As an American.
That's a pro-gun control ad featuring a number of celebrities. It's entitled Demand a Plan, the first National Rifle Association ad. Widely criticized, Buster, for involving the president's children. Do you think your organization overstepped the line by doing that?
Well, in some respects, yes, but under the circumstances, what we were trying to do with that ad is to shout louder, I guess is what it would be said. Pick up a bullhorn. Get attention to the issue. And of course, Tony, what Wayne didn't stop with just arming, as his only solution, as you pointed out. He was very much in favor of studying mental health and how we can identify, people and rebuild our mental health system in that same NEWTH conference. Another thing he was, pointing out, we gotta be taking a look at the violent videos and whether or not that does affect people. Wayne had a three-pronged approach to it.
Buster, let me quote from Wayne LaPierre on those subjects. Here's a quote. In a race to the bottom, media conglomerates compete with one another to shock, violate, and offend every standard of civilized society by bringing an ever more toxic mix of reckless behavior and criminal cruelty into our homes every minute of every day, of every month, of every year. Tony Givhart, do you think the media and our overall culture of violence has something to do with this?
Well, absolutely, that's a component of this. And I think that's something that the NRA talked about. That's something that President Obama and Vice President Biden talked about. So that's certainly part of this. But I'm glad you played the NRA ad. And Buster, frankly, I'm glad that you admit that was over the top and across the line. But, you know, that's what we saw from the NRA because, as I've said, they are simply trying to distract. They are not trying to address the issue, and as Buster said, they want to shout. They don't want to have a debate about why criminal background checks are, you know, beyond the pale or why we need assault weapons.
Gentlemen,
they
want to
talk about the president's children.
I want to squeeze in one more phone call. We are running out of time. Don in Wausau has been waiting patiently. Don, you're on Route 51.
Hello. I'd like to ask Buster one question, and that is, do you feel that having an assault rifle makes you bigger or stronger or more powerful than the person that has a smaller gun than you?
I don't know what you mean by assault rifle. I don't know what you mean by smaller. You're talking about the total weight, like 8 pounds versus 7.5 pounds or something? I don't know where you're coming from with that one, do you?
No, I'm talking in a fate and
caliber?
An intimidation factor. An assault rifle that carries 100 rounds as compared to somebody that's got a concealed carry carrying 10 rounds.
Are you getting to a psychological question here, Don? Are you
saying
that it makes Buster feel more like a man or something like that?
These assault rifles, they're the ones that are killing mass amounts of people. How many people got killed in the school? I mean,
Don, we've got to hold it right there because I'm down to my last minute and a half. I'm going to let Buster respond to you very quickly, then we'll talk to Tony.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out your question, so I don't have an answer for that one at all. I'm sorry. And, Tony, we're running out of time, but I'd like to say I appreciated, the discussion today, and actually I'd like to continue it with you some more. I think we got a lot we can share, but it's gonna take more time.
Tony, very quickly.
Well, I appreciate the discussion as well, Buster, and I look forward to talking more, but I think that folks around the country, including, victims of domestic violence, feel an urgency with this issue, and so we're hopeful that Congress act quickly to enact these things that are supported by the vast majority of gun owners and non-gun owners. And, you know, so we have a more peaceful and safe Wisconsin and nation.
We want to thank today's guest, Effie Buster Bachhuber of Wausau, a member of the National Rifle Association Board of Directors. Joining us by phone from Madison, Tony Gibbart, the policy coordinator for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence. You can find out more about his organization at wcadv.org. A reminder that the National Rifle Association is holding its state convention in Wausau the weekend of February 10th. I'm Glenn Mobrig of Route 51 and Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, and John Altenberg for our theme. Next week, we venture into the beautiful and therapeutic world of origami, the art of folded paper sculptures, by exploring a new exhibit at Wausau's Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.